try not to make that happen. Maybe that'd be good for us sometimes. But good morning. It's great to be with you and to spend this morning with you, some of this afternoon as well. It's just a great privilege to be back here and our family to be able to fellowship. Some of you know us very well, maybe too well, and then some of you may not have a clue who we are. And I know there's lots of new faces here, and maybe even you're visiting this morning, so I'll just give a brief introduction. I was a young man in 1996, and I started attending here for about 8 years and got married during that time, and my wife also attended here. And those that were in attendance or members here back in the 90s and early 2000s, this is our home, and we really appreciated our time here. And then in 2007, we left Peterborough and went into training to join Ethnos Canada, who does church planting among unreached people groups around the world. And that's where we've been since that time, and only back here occasionally to visit. And so we really appreciate Westmount. We appreciate your partnership with us. And as we've been able to come back and reconnect over the years, just enjoy being able to meet some of you and to get to know some of you. A couple years ago, we joined in on the caroling night. That was a really fun memory for our family to do that. And maybe we'll do that again this year if that happens. But yeah, so today we're just really happy to be able to fellowship with you and to, first of all, open God's Word together and then to see what His Word would be for us today. And so I'll invite you to turn with me in your Bibles to the book of Mark, Mark chapter 4. Living in the Philippines for the last 16 years, we have had the privilege of experiencing some pretty massive storms called typhoons as they come in off the Pacific. And the Philippines acts as a kind of a barrier to the rest of Asia as the typhoons build out into over the Pacific Ocean and sometimes to the super typhoon status. And you probably hear about this in the news. As those massive storms will come across, crash into the Philippines, and cause great devastation. And so, yeah, we've experienced some of those, nothing too alarming, but certainly as you look at the power of 240-kilometer winds, and you wake up the next morning, it seems they always come through at night. I don't know why that is. But you wake up in the morning, you look around and see this branches down, leaves down. In our little village where we were, we woke up one morning and looked out. Our neighbor, half of their roof was missing. Others had branches stuck down into their roof. Because some pretty devastation that can happen. One of our fellow missionaries told us a story about in their village where a lady was trapped out. She hadn't made it home, and the storm hit. And so she had a tarp with her, and she found a little depression in the ground and just wrapped the tarp around her and just hunkered there until the storm passed over. It can be pretty devastating. Jesus dealt here in this story we're going to look at today with a very literal storm in Mark chapter 4. And this passage is probably going to be very familiar to many of you, but we want to look at this and revisit it today for a look at applying it to the storms that can happen in our lives. Not physical storms necessarily, although it could be in those, certainly in those cases, but also in the storms of life that come our way and are sure to come. If they have not come, they will come. So let's look at these verses together in Mark chapter 4, starting to read at verse 35. That day, when evening came, he said to his disciples, "Let us go over to the other side." Jesus had been teaching all day. We have that recorded in the first part of the chapter. He had been teaching. People hadn't been understanding. He had explained it to the disciples. It had been a long day, and he had was tired. And so that day when the evening came, he said to his disciples, "Let's go over to the other side." And leaving the crowd behind, they took him along just as he was in the boat. There were also other boats with him. A furious squall came up, and the waves broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped. Jesus was in the stern, sleeping on a cushion. The disciples woke him and said to him, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" I'm just going to stop there for now as we contemplate this part of the story. "Don't you care if we drown?" Jesus had been, as I said, preaching all day, teaching. It says here, they took him along just as he was. It's not really clear what that means, but some commentators have said he was tired. They just took him, he just hopped in. He didn't go and get prepared for this, just hopped in, and he found a cushion and fell asleep. They're out on the Sea of Galilee. This is the sea that they're on. It's just a small sea in the northern part of Israel. It's the lowest freshwater lake at 680 feet below sea level, with high mountains around it. I've never been there, but this is what I read. It's 21 kilometers by 13 kilometers in size. So pretty substantial size, but a small for a sea. But the terrain of that area is such that these squalls could come up quite quickly. And the semi-tropical area there, the air would get trapped over the lake, and as the colder airs would come over the mountains, a sudden storm could easily happen. The boat they're in is probably quite small. In 1986, they discovered a boat from this era during a drought, and it was 26 and a half feet long, 7.5 feet wide, and 4.5 feet deep. That was probably similar to the boat that they would have been in, this small fishing vessel, enough for quite a few men, but 4.5 feet deep is not very deep for a boat. And so it has been recorded in the Sea of Galilee that they can have sometimes waves from 6 to 10 feet high. And I'm not that great at math, but I can tell that 6 minus 4.5 is 2.5, right? And that could be a lot of water that could be coming over the boat. And this is the situation that happens while they are going. And where is Jesus? He's asleep during this event. The disciples were distressed, and rightfully so. This is a life-threatening storm. These guys are fishermen. Some of them are fishermen by trade. That's what they were. And so they had been out in the Sea of Galilee many times. And so they understood the predicament that they were in. This is not something that was new to them. The disciples were distressed. And I see a parallel here for us in many ways. This story has many parallels for us, and I can relate to what their situation, not in the physical way, but in the storms that come into our own life. And their predicament parallels many of our situations. It's important to learn in the light so that we have strength in the dark. And so I don't know where you are this morning. Maybe you are in the middle of a situation where this is going to be absolutely pertinent to the situation that you find yourself this morning. Or it could be that you have come through something, or it is possible that you are heading into something. But I've lived long enough to know that if you live long enough, you will run into situations that are going to stretch you and are going to cause a storm in your life. This storm was not a surprise to the Lord, even though he is asleep in the situation. And the storms that come into our lives are not a surprise to him. But what's special about this is that there is something that Jesus is doing in this. There is a progression in the story, where we see at the beginning of the story, there is a certain understanding that the disciples have, and at the end of the story, there is a different understanding that they have. And that progression is something that we can learn from this morning, because we are all going from this to that. We are all going on a progression as we learn about Christ more and as his being with us in our storms. In this story, we're going to see two perspectives. What our response to distressing situations often is, paralleled by the disciples, and what it ought to be. And then we'll see what Jesus accomplished through the situation and what his application is for us. So that's where we're going to go here as we look at this. So I want to look at, first of all, at the disciples' initial response as they are in this situation, this dire situation. And so we see what they say here. They call, you know, they're in the storm. This sudden storm comes up, and they look, there's Jesus asleep, and they look around at the situation. They see that they are going to die if something doesn't happen here. And they see Jesus lying there, sleeping. So they go to him, and they say, "Teacher, teacher, don't you care if we drown?" I don't know if you can relate to this, but they call him teacher. He had been teaching all day. He's teacher. I was going to say that maybe they didn't really fully understand the scope of who Jesus was yet. But as we look at the parallel passages, this story also occurs in Matthew and Luke, we see that different words are used. So I think it's Mark is focusing on this progression that Jesus is teaching them a lesson through this situation. And so they probably called him all these things. There's 12 of them, right? The teacher, master, Lord. And in this situation there, they see him as the teacher, but they haven't fully understood him as the Lord. It's probably a stylistic choice that Mark uses here. But this story is going to be a big step, taking them from understanding him just as a good man, a wise man, someone who they have started to follow, and to see him as he truly is. They were watching him, but they hadn't fully come to know him. It's interesting, in the next chapter, demons come and talk to Jesus, and they refer to him as Jesus, Son of the Most High God. But these disciples here in the boat referred to him as teacher. They had seen him teaching, healing, and forgiving, but still he was just mostly teacher. Now, I don't want to belittle the disciples, okay? Because I can totally relate to them, and certainly they were on a journey. And so this story is not in any way to make fun of them or to make fun of anyone who may be on that journey. But I think we're going to see at the end of this story, there's something to be learned from this progression. And so just put that in your pocket for later, and we'll look at this. So these disciples were looking at Jesus lying there, and they don't just say, I'm scared. They ask a question here, and it's an interesting question with a lot of implications. And it says, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown? Don't you care if we drown?" And that question is not a question of why. Why is this happening? That's the normal question that we ask. And that's a very normal question. When something comes into our life that is difficult to deal with, our question is why. We were talking with some friends just on Friday and talking about some of the serious situations that they had seen other missionaries going through. And the question came up with why. And that's very natural. It's not the question they ask here. Why do we ask why? Do you ever ask yourself why you ask why? If you stop and think about that, it's because it seems so obvious to us what God should do, right? We, you know, in our infinite wisdom that we have as mortal humans, I hope you understand the sarcasm there. We see efficiency. Some of us are born to make life more efficient, right? And you see efficiency as the final good. And so you look at God and say, where's that? It often is, you know, what's the easy way? What is the affordable way? And then it almost never includes sickness, and it never includes waste, and it never includes waiting, right? That's the way God should work, right? He's God, right? Surely he does things efficiently. Surely he does things without waste. And we look in our own perspective on things, and it doesn't seem that that's the way he operates. I can testify of the times of waiting. I can testify to times where God seems very inefficient. Maybe even like, okay, I'm speaking in worldly terms, right? Wasteful. But it seems in God's economy that those wasteful installments are the best investment that achieve his desired outcomes. He has a whole different economy of things that he is working out, and he has maybe even different goals than we do as far as efficiency and all those things. We see this on the field. Our role right now is personnel coordinators. So we are helping recruit people and then process them through, seeing them come to the field and helping them get settled. And people get sick. The kids get sick, and they have to go home. They've done years of training. They've committed. They've decided this is what they're going to do. And then, in God's sovereignty, he rips them out of that situation and takes them on to something else. And we only see one little chapter in the story, right? Doesn't make any sense. So we say, why? And that's a very natural response. If you are asking why today, you are in very good company. The question why is asked of God many, many times in the Bible. Moses asked it. Joshua asked it. Gideon asked it. David asked it. Job asked it. Habakkuk asked it, and many others. Even the Lord Jesus, in his hour on the cross, asked, why have you forsaken me? Could it be that there's more to be gained by difficulty and waiting and adversity than a smooth sailing pleasure cruise across a remarkably clear sea? Is there more that God might be doing, and he uses those things to make that happen? How many other expeditions did Jesus take with his disciples that we don't even know about? They were unremarkable. They walked from here to here. Nothing happened. Nothing learned. Nothing gained from that. Is it possible that this one was more impactful, not because it was easy, but because it was hard? And I think it's a pretty established truth that hardship is a greater teacher than ease and passivity. And so they ask the question, but actually that wasn't their question. Their question was, do you not care? And the question, do you not care, is a whole different level of, has a whole different depth to it. The question is loaded with serious implications that when they question Jesus' care, it goes at his very character. Are you relating to us? Do you see us? This is the question. Am I just floating? Are you sleeping over there and you don't even see me? Are you a transcendent God? Are you just up there doing your thing? Are you immanent? Are you living here in and with us? If my kids ask me to help them and I can't or I don't, that's one thing. But if I say I don't care, that hits to the very heart of the person's identity. And so here they are in this boat, and they're asking this very difficult question, Jesus, do you even care? And that's a whole level of depth there that we'll look at. This word care is the same word Jesus used about the hired shepherd who runs when the wolf would come in John chapter 10. Said, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. And he who is a hired hand and not a shepherd, who does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees, and the wolf snatches them and scatters them. He flees because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. Jesus said, I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me. Jesus, do you care? And we can get to that point when we look at things from our perspective and we wonder why, and then we start to doubt even his own goodness to us. So the question of care is God good? Is he even good? Or do these things that happen to me, is he actually evil and doing things to me that I don't like and I can't stand? And the disciples are looking at their circumstances. They are looking at Jesus' sleeping posture, seeming disinterest, and questioning the morality of his character. You seem like a bad person right now, is their thought. They did not yet know experientially that he was going to be good and when they needed him to be. And he seemed good at other times, but would he be good now? And we can get to that point. We start asking that question. The disciples' question implies that he should care. They had invested in him. They had left their fathers and their occupations to follow Jesus. They had seen enough to have raised expectations that they knew he wasn't just a man, but they still didn't know him completely. They looked at him and If I was them in a boat, and I'm a trained fisherman, I've done this all my life, and I look at a former carpenter turned homeless preacher, I'm not going to look at him for help in this situation, but they did have expectations. They knew that there was something different about him, but it didn't seem that he was doing what he should have been doing in this time, and therefore they were disappointed. They may have... Yeah. Sorry, I'm going to keep going on here. So in this cry, there's an appeal to what they are hoping that Jesus would be, but with a yet unrealized convincing. They're not convinced yet about who he is, and so they ask, do you care? There's a disappointment also rooted in the belief that perhaps there's a disappointment rooted in the belief that God is obligated to us. Peter, shortly after this, says that we have left all. And we have left all and we're following you. Here, they didn't sign up to follow Jesus. He called them and they went. This was his idea. Sometimes we can also get into this erroneous idea that somehow God is obligated to give me ease and comfort. And I mean, we've left all. We have decided to follow Jesus. He should, at least make it easy for us. We would never say this out loud, perhaps, but I think if we're honest, that thought can be right there under the surface. The obligation that we feel God has to us is both untrue in reality and in our imaginations. First of all, God is not obligated to us. He is God, and we are not. And so to think that we can put God into some sort of state of obligation is categorically unwarranted. And even if it was possible to do so, when we measure what he has given us and what we have given him, we will also find that the obligation is still solidly on our side. So it's categorically not true, and it's also not true in our imaginations when we start to think that maybe it is true. So we need to catch ourselves when we think that. But it's so easy to do. We look at other people, why do the unrighteous do well? Why they seem to be blessed? And I'm following you. And it's so easy to do. And it's tricky. It catches us. It's sneaky. Yeah, so maybe these are some of the things that were going on in their minds, and can we relate to that? When things happen? It says, do you not care if we drown? These men are experienced fishermen, as I said, and the squall comes up, a fierce gale of wind, the New American Standard says, and they look at it, and this is a bad one. They recognize this is going to be bad. And they say, we are perishing. It's actually in the act or in the present tense. Like, we are dying right now. Have you been in that far along in a situation where you feel you are dying? You are lost. You are, it's too late almost for you. All they could see, Jesus doesn't care. And if you live long enough, you're going to run into a storm in your life that rattles you to the core, and that sounds very pessimistic, but I've lived too long to know that that's the truth. And we look out at who's here this morning. There's things that come into our life. There's people here that used to be here. I'm not thinking of individuals, but there are people who have been in pews like this, or these very pews perhaps, that have run into storms in their life. And it started off with why, and then it went on to do you care? And they gave up. And that's why we need to learn this in the light, so we have the strength in the dark. Let's look at what Jesus can do, right? So that we can hold on to that. He does allow things into our lives. He gave Paul a thorn in his flesh. There's things that he allows, but we need to recognize the truth about God. So in times of distress, it is very natural to question God and his very character. But our second point is that in times of distress, we need to lean on the actual truth about God, not our circumstances, not those things that are around. And so what could the disciples have seen in this story? Let's think about this a little bit. We need to specifically lean into the sovereignty of God. If you go back to the very first thing that Jesus said in this little story, he says, let us go over to the other side. What did he not say? He did not say, let us go out into the middle of the lake and let us drown there, right? He did not say that. Jesus had an appointment on the other side of the sea. He was going to meet a man that has demon possessed, and he was going to heal him, and he was going to glorify himself over there. And this was the step that was going to take. They're going to go across the sea. And we know that Jesus would have drowned as well presumably, right? He would have drowned as well if they had drowned. Was that God's plan? Did they understand enough about God's plan that that was probably not going to happen? Could they have in that moment maybe thought reasonably about what God's sovereign plan for Jesus was, and that it did not include them drowning in the middle of the sea? We take it to the bank that what God plans, he will accomplish. Isaiah 46 is very clear about this, that remember the former things, those of long ago. I am God and there is no other. I am God and there is none like me. I make known the end from the beginning, from ancient times, what is still to come. I say my purpose will stand and I will do all that I please. From the east, I summon a bird of prey from a far off land, a man to fulfill my purpose. What I have said, that will I bring about. What I have planned, that will I do. Does that sound like someone who maybe could get caught in the storm and accidentally drown? It doesn't sound like it at all. There's someone who has sovereign control over every situation. In Isaiah 46, is talking about Cyrus, the king of Persia, who God was going to use to bring his people back. One of the richest rulers, the strongest ruler at the time. He was going to use him. Is there anything that is too hard for the Lord? So here we are in a boat going across the sea. Could They trust in the sovereignty of God in this, that he would take them across. If he's going to go across a lake and take you along, you are going to arrive there. And you can trust in that. And we can lean into that. Philippians 1:6, he who began a good work in you will carry it on to completion until the day of Jesus Christ. Even death cannot stop what his purposes are. We think of Esther. She goes into the king's presence. If I perish, I perish. That's up to the Lord. He had already preached the Sermon on the Mount. They had sat there and listened to, do not worry about tomorrow. Seek first the kingdom of God, and all those things will be added. God is in control, and we can lean in that. But when you're in it, we need to lean into that. That's when we need to remind ourselves of that. God has sovereign control over my situation, no matter how dire it feels that I am in. Secondly, we need to specifically remember the truth that he can handle any situation. Jesus was sleeping in the storm. Okay? Jesus was sleeping. How worried was he about the storm? He was sleeping. They say that children can sense their parents' stress levels, right? You as a parent know this, right? You get stressed, your kids feel it, and they start acting in ways they don't even understand, right? The disciples here are not getting the cues from the master as they look at him. He's not concerned, and they are concerned. In times of distress, we need to look at the Lord and see, is he distressed about this? And obviously, that's not something God does. He does not get distressed about anything. In fact, our fear is dissipated by fearing something greater. It says in Proverbs that we are to fear the Lord. There's many times it says that, fear the Lord. And why do we do that? Fear the Lord, in Proverbs 19:23, says it leads to life. Then one rests content, untouched by trouble. Jesus was completely in the will of his Father. He was resting in the midst of strife. Fear of man will be a snare, it says in Proverbs 29, but whoever trusts in the Lord is kept safe. We can trust him. It says the fear of the Lord, if we are fearing him, then we don't have to fear anything else. We can just rest in him and know that he is absolutely in control. This is where faith comes in. Later on, he's going to say to the disciples, says, I'm kind of giving away the end of the story a little bit, but he says, where is your faith? Where is your faith? Look at me. I've got everything under control. But you're sleeping. Still, he's got it. He's sleeping, but at the same time, he is the creator of this, of everything. At the same time, he's actually holding all things together, Colossians 1 says. He's sleeping, yeah, on the boat. It shows his humanity, but as God, he was holding all things together. He wasn't worried at all. And we can recognize, if we recognize that, we can handle these situations and trust him in it. Another thing we need to lean into is God's compassion. They said, do you care? But we do know that God is a God of compassion. Jesus had already showed that he cared. If you go back in the book of Mark, just a couple chapters back, you can look at several things that he did. He touched a leprous man. Okay, that's not what you do. They didn't touch leprous people. He touched him and healed him out of compassion for him. That man had probably never been touched for years. And Jesus reached out and touched him. What a compassionate heart, and healed him. They saw him drinking and eating with sinners and tax collectors. He had compassion on them. He told people, I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners. And his heart was for the sinners. He had even defended the disciples' actions when the Pharisees picked on them for seemingly breaking one of their oppressive laws. And they had just watched him all day teaching out in the hot sun, exhausting himself. Was he compassionate? Did he care? Absolutely. They just needed to see that, right? And remember that. He had already designed the earth and the water and the mountains and the wind and the unique geographical formation that would bring that wind roaring through their proximity. And he created this moment for these individuals to experience firsthand what you and I can only read about. They were given by his caring hand the opportunity to see him reveal himself in a new way. This was him caring. He was providing an opportunity for them to grow. The Bible is clear, God does care. 1 Peter, cast all your cares upon him, for he cares for you. And then they also needed to remind themselves that they were in the presence of God. Lean into that. Wherever you go, wherever situation you are, Jesus was still in the boat with them, right? He's right there. He was in the midst, and he promises to be with us. Go ye into all the world and preach the gospel, and lo, I am with you always. Almost every time Jesus or God commands, he says, I go with you. That's it. So whatever he takes you into, whether it's across the sea, where it's across the street, you know, whatever he calls you to do, he's with you in that. So we recognize that it's very natural for us to distress in the storms of life. But what we're called to as we look at these disciples is do not do that, but instead lean into the truth that we know about God. And that's where we need to camp out. And as you look at the rest of the story, we see that Jesus is indeed completely in control. Let's look at the rest of the story. Teacher, don't you care if we drown? And Jesus got up. He rebuked the wind and said to the waves, quiet, be still. Then the wind died down and it was completely calm. Reminds us of the Jonah passage, right? God, the same in the Old Testament and same in the New Testament. He said to his disciples, why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith? And they were terrified. They had the fear of the Lord and asked each other, who is this? Even the wind and the waves obey him. Jesus is sleeping, and he's still in absolute control of the storm. He stands, he rebukes the storm. He stands and with a voice that created all the water, the land, and the wind, and the very ingredients for the storm, he speaks, and it again does his bidding. And he says, peace, be still. It's just calm. What words? Peace, be still. In our storms, there is a peace that he offers in it. It may not look like at anyone else looking at your situation may see no reason for peace, but he provides peace in those things that is unexplainable. Then Jesus uses the distresses of storms to show us who he is. The disciples say, who then is this that even the wind and the sea obey him? Here, remember these guys at the beginning, teacher, just vague ideas. And here they are presented in the midst of the storm when the thing that was going to kill them, we are perishing, is now gone completely, just removed. And peace remains. And they look at this Jesus who they've started to follow, and they're terrified of a new thing because they realize this is not just the teacher. This is someone greater, and they're terrified. The disciples see what Jesus does, and they are amazed. 11 times in the book of Mark, it says that people are amazed at Jesus. We read it so many times, sometimes we forget to see the amazing things that Jesus did and the impact. And so you can kind of chart these things in the book of Mark as he goes through. People are constantly confronted with the person of who Jesus is. And every time they come away in amazement. And here, the disciples are one example of that. What do you think of Jesus this morning? Do you know Jesus, the creator, the sustainer, controller of storms? And you may be here this morning and need to know that this Jesus in the story is not just a pipe dream that wishful people hold on to because they're weak. He is a real person who lived nearly 2,000 years ago. The historical arguments for his life and death are overwhelming. Don't have time to go into that. But this same Jesus did not die and stay in the grave like other Messiah figures or religious heroes. He rose again, and he ate and drank with people before returning to his Father's side in heaven, and he is alive today. In Romans says, he was appointed the Son of God in power by his resurrection from the dead. And in your storms, he is still the living creator God who can still calm physical seas, but also the stormy seas of our tumultuous lives. And for those here who have already placed our trust in Jesus, we've seen this, we've already experienced this to some degree. We need to continue to remind ourselves of who he is and not fall into those easy things that we can fall back into when things get difficult. That learn, get to know him, see him through his word, who he is. Experience that so that when those things that come along and that will surely come, we remind ourselves of the truth and not get caught up in those circumstances that are legitimately challenging to our faith. Here we need to remind ourselves and see the compassion of God. He cares. He does care. He is a caring God, and he cares about you. He cares about me. See that. This is one of the points of this story. He does care. Hold on to that. He is omnipotent. He is all-powerful. He can do what he says he will do. He is sovereign. He is in control of everything. Hold on to that. And he is present with us. He's with you in every situation. Jesus took these guys terrified, and he brought them to their knees terrified of him, of who he is, and not in a terrible way, but recognizing that he is God, and he what a grace that was to them. And these things that will come into our lives, they are graces as well. They are graces that he allows and that he uses to bring us to a better understanding, a fuller understanding, an experiential understanding of who he is. We can thank the Lord for that.